Vanita Marks, Paul Dottino in for David Deal today. And it's a special day because we're talking about Jerry's book, Big Blue Wrecking Crew. And if you have any questions, you want to comment about the 86 Giants, now's the time to do it. 201-939-4513. Also, we'll be monitoring Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. My question is, what's the one thing that you learned from writing this book? All the research you did, what's the most intriguing, the one thing that surprised you that you walked away with going, wow?
Well, that Bill Parcells could have been the coach here in 1997. That was the one thing. I mean, I sat up, you know, in this facility with John Maher, and he told me the story that Bill was going to come back. And if there were cell phones at that time, mm-hmm. Bill Parcells would have been coaching Big Blue in 1997 after leaving the Patriots. That to me was quite surprising. And, you know, I did that interview probably 2.5 years before the book came out. So I'm thinking, I hope he doesn't tell anybody else this story. Please don't tell
Jerry, there
this.
Were a lot of us who knew it, though. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
I'm sure. Well, you know, it's funny because then I was with Imani Toomer, and he said the same thing. He said, I ended up playing for Jim Fossil. I could have ended up playing for Bill Parcells. You know, and he said he remembered hearing the story, too. But that, to me, was really surprising because the relationship, the fracture in the relationship with George Young, the general manager, while they were able to work together because, you know, pretty much everybody was committed to winning, and that superseded everything. But in 1997, George Young wasn't having any of that and kind of interceded in a way that blocked that from happening. The other thing, Anita, I would say is I grew up on this team. You know, I've said it before. I threw up Cheese Whiz when Sean Landetta missed that punt. I was 9 years old, unhealthy fan, got all nervous. They're playing the Bears, and I threw up. Like, so, but
okay.
I've dialed it back a little bit.
TMI, you know, at lunchtime right there.
Yeah, sorry about that if you're eating your lunch. But who this team is foundationally for Giants fans, they are – I really found it's a team of generations. It's a team that people share – with other generations. Like, you have to know about these guys. I've gotten tweets of people reading the book. Now I understand what my dad was talking about. Or I wish I was alive to see these guys. I've heard so much about it, but now reading the book, I wish I could actually have seen it. I understand what people talk about when they see the 89s and the 11 jerseys and the 56 and the 58s around here. It is really something that, you know, I've seen from the social media that's presence, why that's so significant. But even, you know, Phil McConkie, you know, this slot wide receiver for the Giants who is a free agent, makes the team, used to be in the Navy. He gets stops in Spark's Steakhouse in the city by a guy who, you know, says, thank you for your service in the Navy, but I have to introduce my son to you. The fact that he had to introduce his son and interrupt McConkie because you were the guy that ran out there with the towel, and he told him, of course, where our season tickets were and everything, but that it was this team of generations. And quite frankly, who the Giants, if you grew up with the Eli Manning Giants, you know them as winners. You've won Super Bowls. It wasn't like that before 86.
No.
It was not like that. So they became a foundation for who the organization is, too.
No question.
I would imagine, how much time did you have with LT?
None.
What?
None.
Are you serious?
I am serious. Now, his character comes through in the book because everybody talks about LT, and certainly LT has said a ton on his own.
Did he just not want to meet with you?
You'd have to ask. I think he was scared. You see my arm. he was scared. He's like, I don't want to mess with that dude. No. His agency took questions, and I probably, for over half a year, once a week, was reaching out. They took questions. They would take the questions. They looked at the questions. They got back to me. Finally, he was on a golf course in Florida, and one of his teammates, who is in the book, said, I'm going to hand the cell phone to him. I'm going to be here then. And I call, and it goes straight to voicemail. And that's when I knew it was time to give up, that he just wasn't going to participate. But there's plenty of LT in the book as a character because you get perspective from the teammates and the coaches in there.
So I hosted an event for ESPN about, I don't know, a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And LT was the guest speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And so to hear him talk about the quarterback situation that year and how that – you're laughing.
Well, I'm wondering. I'm interested. What did he have to say?
Well, I mean, you've heard him talk about how, you know, his thoughts on
– He was one who laughed at Phil's lack of athleticism.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
That's a great way of putting it.
You know?
Yeah.
And Phil – you know, I want to say one thing. You talked to Phil, right?
Absolutely. For a long, 2.5 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. The one thing about Phil And it goes back to what you just said a little while ago about how young people grew up with Eli and the Giants as winners and that they don't understand it. Phil, in my mind, never got the respect he deserved when he was playing here with the Giants. There were people who booed him. There were people who were disgusted at early in his career. He threw a lot of picks. He fumbled a lot because he'd get the living stuffing kicked out of him because the offensive line couldn't keep him upright.
Yep.
And Phil was so determined to make it work in spite of everything, even though at one point he demanded to be traded, and he did. And then even after that, I remember Parcells would sit at the end of the table, talk to us in the press room and say, you know, guys, years down the road, people are going to look back and say, yeah, that guy ain't no Phil Sims. And that's the truth. That's the truth. Because he never got his just due when he was here. He, in my mind, still deserves to be considered for the Hall of Fame, and it's because Mark Jackson dropped a surefire touchdown pass in the 93 season finale at the 10-yard line in the left flat against the Dallas Cowboys that cost Phil his 200th career touchdown pass, and in my mind, has been a big sticking point as to why he's not in the Hall of Fame. Off my soapbox.
Well, I mean, Phil Sims is some of the best stuff in the book, but to start with the LT stuff, he knows how LT felt about him. And and this Minnesota game in the book is the turning point. I mean, LT has said that's when he's my guy, when he completes that pass. That's when Phil Sims is my guy. But I asked Phil about that, and he said Lawrence didn't. You know, he probably still doesn't know where I came from or how I grew up. He probably thought I was some rich white boy. I mean, that's in the book. He knows how Lawrence interacted with him. And there's some great – I love the stuff about Sims in the book because who is this guy out of Moorhead State? Where did he come from? One of eight kids. I mean, he grew up poor. He would tell me, don't make this a poor man's tale. It's not about that, Jerry. But he was tough because of the way he grew up. Because of he had to have a job if he wanted school supplies at 7 years old. And for four of his first five seasons here, he finished the season injured. So he didn't get the respect from the fans. I mean, he'd be mocked walking on the street in New York City. He went to pick up his dry cleaning, and the guy was trying to tell him how to play NFL quarterback. All right, and he's sitting there, and he's a gentleman, and but in his head, he's saying, "Man, I'd like to come behind the counter and beat you down a little bit here. Tell me how to play quarterback." I mean, there's a game in '86; they're playing the Chargers, and he gets hit so hard he's on the ground, and Lionel Manuel goes over to him, and is saying, "You got to get out of the game. You got to get out of the game." And I won't use the colorful language that Phil used at the time, but he said, "I would never give the fans the satisfaction," and he stayed in the game. He had that kind of toughness that. Is if you go back and watch the tape, it's undeniable, but people don't realize that. And you know, as far as the Hall of Fame stuff, he also doesn't get credit for a second Super Bowl because he only played, 14 games that year when they went on to win the Super Bowl?
Bruce Smith knocked him out in the Bills game,
yep.
broke his foot. I think, you know, when you talk about Phil, he had the Jake LaMotta mentality. You know, didn't get me down, Ray. You didn't get me down. That was Phil Sims. He was Jake LaMotta on the football field.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about Eli being so durable. Heck, Anita, you know, the consecutive game string is legendary. And you know, he'll never catch Brett Favre, but it's no less impressive than what Favre did. Phil had, like, Evel Knievel. He was so beaten up. Every bone in his body was broken. I could tell you a story when Phil ripped his knee up, all right, earlier in his career. I remember being here for a mini camp and watching Phil – lower level of Giant Stadium, okay, hopping on the bad knee one step at a time up all 35 rows between the sections of Giant Stadium to strengthen his knee. And I remember seeing him after he was done, and he was in agony. He was exhausted and in agony. And I went up to him, and I said, Phil, I said, is that really part of your rehab? And he goes, Paul, I got to do it. He goes, I'm going to make it back. I'm going to do it. He goes, he was so determined that there was no – and if people could have understood all he had to overcome and the way he was scotch-taped together early in his career to do what he did, maybe then they would understand why he is so revered by those who know him, because he is that great.
Yeah, and there's a part about him that is just – he's not introspective, which I think great athletes often are not introspective. They don't sit there and wonder, how did I do that? And this guy loved to compete. There's a point in the book where I thought it was interesting because there's a vulnerability that he expresses about how in high school his buddies would like to go out to a party, and all he wanted to say as a teenager was like, can't we just go play basketball or go lift on Friday night? He goes, but it was awkward. It was awkward to say something like that at that time. And to me, that's a telling detail about, you know, it underscores what you just said about him hopping up the stadium steps. This guy just wanted to compete. Guys talk about, you know, the cliche of we lost to the Bears. That was our rallying point. I asked him, he said, I was on the plane. I just wanted to get back to training camp.
Yeah.
I didn't. He goes, people make that stuff up. Oh, I need that. I didn't need a rallying point. Just let me get back out in the field and compete. And that's what I don't think people realize about him, you know, and especially now. I mean, he was telling me, you know, before I interviewed him, he was at the gym and he's working out and these teenagers are looking at him and they're kind of whispering to themselves, looking at him. And they go up and they're like, you know, you're so mean. And he's like, what are you talking about? And he said, well, on Madden, when I call the wrong play call, you're saying it's a dumb play call. And I mean, and it's so funny because for generations of people, they know him as the guy on CBS or a guy on Madden. Yeah. And they don't know the guy we're talking about. And he's not going to, you know, he's not branding himself out there as that.
Here's some comments and some questions for you. This is from Big D. He says, love Eli, but I'll take Phil Sims every time. Phil does not get the credit for the 90 team. That team was 10-0 at one time before Phil Sims got injured. And his question is, in an era of pounding the rock, was Sims one of the first quarterbacks to throw for over 4,000 yards?
He wasn't one of the first because that did happen a few times in the 70s, but that
was one of the few at the time.
Yeah, one of the few at the time to do that. And then he had, what, like a 485-yard game or something like that?
He had a 500-yard game.
A 500-yard game, yeah. So he could throw it. And there's no. And Dan Reeves, just to talk about his arm strength, when Dan and I interviewed Dan Reeves for the book as well, but he said when he came here, he saw Phil throw in the wind in the old stadium and the weather, and he said, "You're a Hall of Famer." He said that to him while he was playing. He said, you're a Hall of Famer. He said, I had no idea what you had to do here.
Did anybody tell you, not that it relates to 86, but Phil, midway through that final season, he ripped his rotator cuff against the Cardinals. And he could not lift his arm up above his shoulder. And he played the rest of that 93 season with a torn rotator cuff, threw a bunch of short passes, you know, from being a quarterback, Anita. You know, you got to be able to wing it. And if you can't, defenses will cheat on you.
Yeah.
Well, Phil Sims, the second part of that 93 season, played with a torn rotator cuff, willed the Giants into the playoffs, and then had the surgery following that. And that, of course, was it for him because he never was able to come back into the NFL again. But the toughness of him to be able to do that, he wasn't going to come out of the lineup.
201-939-4513. That's the phone number. That's how you get on board. By the way, if you're watching the show on the Giants app, we have some questions out there. And this one is – we have another one coming, but this is our first one. Who will be the leading rusher for the Giants against the Vikings this coming Monday night? Get this, Paul. 82% say Darkwa. 18% says Rashad Jennings. I tell you what, Darkwa's got a lot of fans out there. He really does. I love the way he runs. We're going to dive into some more Giants-Vikings talk, previewing the Monday night football game in just a hot second. But we do have a caller who wants to chime in and talk about the 86 Giants team. Now that we have Jerry Barca in studio, let's go to Lynn, line four. Lynn, you're in.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Lynn.
Great idea for a show. Great idea for a show. First of all, I want to tell Anita, hey, Anita, I got into the stadium early on Sunday, looked up at the telescreen, and there's your interview with the Diocese. It was pretty cool seeing on that big screen inside that stadium. That was a nice interview.
Fun.
Nice
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, hey, Jerry, I'm a season ticket holder that's back for as far as you can go. In the family early on, and, you know, here I am over 50 years on the season ticket holder list. 22 for 25 for 279 and three touchdowns. Doesn't get much better than that.
No.
The Rose Bowl.
Absolutely not, yeah.
I was there that day. Just a quick story. Saw the first Super Bowl, then called the World Championship game, when I was in graduate school sitting in an apartment with 10 guys in Washington, D.C., and I made a pronouncement the first time the Giants go, I'm going. I had to wait 21 years, but I got there. I was there that day. A wonderful day. A wonderful day. And the win, you know, the 4th and 17, wow. Saw it in my living room. It was on TV. It was an away game, as you remember, out in Minnesota. And three wins against Washington. It's tough to beat a team three times, including that shutout in the championship game. I have respect for Jay Schrader, but I want to say this about Jay. I'll bet he still wakes up in the morning and looks around to see where Lawrence Taylor is.
Well, they beat him up that game. He was weak-kneed at the end of the game. Remember, he collapsed on the sidelines.
Yeah.
He was dropping back 20 yards on certain plays, running scared from that pass rush.
Mm-hmm.
And with the win that day, Jerry, I'm sure you remember, trying to throw the ball 20 yards was difficult. It was a tough day. But, wow, when that thing was over and that paper was flying around, almost confetti-like in that stadium.
Come on, Len, fess up. How many rolls of toilet paper did you throw that day? Come on. We
that
know you did.
That was a great moment to be a Giants fan. I tell you, that was and the win in Washington, I don't know if you've seen YouTube repeats of that game, but you got to see that game in Washington when we beat the Redskins. I think it was maybe three games from the end. Maybe the biggest regular season win in maybe top three.
Paul and I were talking about that before the show. December 7th, 1986, down in RFK, and the 24-14.
What a win. That Taylor that day was just, if Coach Jacoby gets into the Hall of Fame, and I hope he does someday, he's a great offensive tackle for the Redskins. I hope those guys don't look at any film of that game, because Lawrence Taylor just ran over him, through him, around him. Just an unbelievable effort.
Don't forget about Brad Benson.
Great to
that
talk
day.
About old-time Giants. Thank you, Paul.
Hi, right, Len.
Thanks, Len. Thank you.
Thank you for calling,
Len. I'm going to put that book on my list. Thanks a lot, Jerry.
Appreciate it.
All right, last question. I want to ask you about this book, and I'd like for you to try to kind of relate it to where we are in present-day NFL,
mm-hmm.
okay? And all the research that you did in writing this book and seeing the mindset, right? What the NFL was like then. What's the biggest difference you see in today's NFL? Are there any correlations? Has anything remained the same? What's the biggest difference that you've...
So the biggest difference is the period that this book captures, and I'm real happy the way it does it, is you're coming out of the 70s and the North Dallas 40s style of the NFL, and this is in a transition period before it becomes a really true profession. It's no longer a ruffian sport that's being taken out in the 80s. And now, once you hit the 90s, I mean, it's a profession. I mean, Paul, you could hang out with these guys and see them doing steps in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything is different. The regiment is far different now. You have, it's a full-time job. You're not just working something different in the offseason. So this is that period of transition. What's the same? You still got to compete, and you still got to want it more than the next guy, and you got to work your tail off, and you got to hit the other guy and be able to take a punch and punch back. I mean, that is still the same. We talked about the Patriots. Is there another team out there that takes punches and then can punch back like they've been in recent years? So I think that is still true to it. I mean, you have to be physical. You have to beat them. You have to have the talent, but the physicality to basically beat somebody mentally. I mean, that's still there.
Because I do find it interesting. I think, this day and age in the NFL, it's all about the pass happy league, right? It's all about the gunslinger now, right? But when you look at the teams that have won the Super Bowl, why have they won? I mean, Denver just dominated the Carolina Panthers and Cam Newton last year. Seattle. I mean, it's just so even though the NFL, I think, has changed to more of that finesse passing game. If a DB sneezes on a wide receiver, there's a flag that's thrown. But at the end of the day, what's winning championships? It's defense. Defense is still winning. That smash mouth football is still what's winning championships. And so I find that quite interesting. And also, I think that's I'll be honest with you. I think that's what scares me the most about this Patriots team this year. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we all, including myself, I think we all underestimated how good this Patriots defense is. And let's go one step further. I think we all underestimated how good this Philadelphia Eagles defense is. We're giving so much credit to Carson Wentz. We're ripping the Cleveland Browns for passing up on Carson Wentz. How stupid can they be? Well, a big reason why this Philadelphia Eagles team is sitting at 3-0 is because they have a really, really good defense.
Yeah.
A reason why this Patriots team is sitting at 3-0 with no Tom Brady is because, yes, let's give credit where credit's due with Bill Belichick and the game plan and the schemes that he's putting together, his commitment to the run, LeGarrette Blount. He's putting these quarterbacks in third and short situations. But at the end of the day, it's these defenses that are helping them win these ball games.
You know, you're talking about today's teams, Anita, and I've had this conversation with infinite numbers of these guys, the 86 team. Mm-hmm. I'm of the opinion, and I keep telling my partner over here all the time, the 80s teams, Bears, Giants, Niners, those teams would kick butt on today's NFL. Because here's the thing. This league is now parity-driven. It is watered down. Free agency's done it. The way everything has been constructed with the schedules, they've done everything they can do to make it a wild card happy finesse league. Mm-hmm. Back then in the 80s, you had your 6, 7, 8 teams who were like strongmans for the mafia. And you know what? You weren't taking our territory. And that to me is the golden age of the NFL, the 1980s. And this Giants team is one of those elite teams that was on the throne. I'm curious, after your research into this book, and you're a football guy, you love the sport, agree, disagree, if you want to, that's okay. I won't strangle you. But I do believe,
let's hope not.
I believe that was the golden age, and that's one of the reasons why this Giants team of 86 is truly one of the great teams of all time.
Is that your favorite team, Paul?
Love them. Absolutely.
But your absolute favorite?
Absolutely.
Is your favorite year?
Bar none.
Okay.
It's tough for me. I have an emotional attachment to it. They're a formative team for me. I mean, I went and I worked for the Detroit Lions in the NFL. I've been around the sport. This was a formative team for me. It's when I put in the DVDs of these old games, I can't help but have this emotional feeling in my belly.
I'm going to make it simple for
about
you.
But no, it was it the best? I mean, defensively, absolutely. It's a way different game. I think Anita points to it.
The
lack of physical nature on the receivers. Nobody, I mean, Sims, with how tough is Sims? Is because he had to stand in there and take those hits. I mean, Joe Montana got bounced off the turf at Giant Stadium by Jim Burt this year. Literally, his whole body bounces off the turf. You don't really see that anymore. And to underscore your point about the defense in this team, look, they had three linebackers that could have started probably anywhere in the NFL that were on the bench because of the lack of free agency. They also, you know, people talk 2000 Ravens, they talk 85 Bears. This team, this defense, didn't give up. They gave up 4 touchdowns to the Cowboys on Monday night in 86. They went a full calendar year before the defense gave up more than 2 offensive touchdowns in a game. Mm-hmm. Now, there might have been a special teams touchdown here or there scored against the Giants throughout 86. But, I mean, come on. That takes something. That was tough. And I – golden era, I don't know. I'm
not buying it, huh?
I'm not going to say
that. All right,
let
me ask you this. First down and goal from the 5-yard line. What's the 86 Giants going to do? What are they going to do? And what's today's Giant team going to do? Today's Giants team goes empty backfield, 4 spread, Eli shotgun. Let's throw it 4 times and see what happens. These guys, Joe, take the ball. We're going to smash it down their throats.
Yeah, but what's one? But what's wrong with going a 3 wide receiver set? I think that's probably one of the most exciting right now. I think the Giants are one of the most exciting offenses in regard to the potential of what they can do with Odell, Sterling Shepard, and Victor Cruz.
It's a different game, and now video game football is the deal. I get it.
See where.
I know.
I was thinking of Madden when he said that. Because when I'm playing Madden, I like to spread it out the goal line.
Of course you do.
So this is the first. This is the first year in 10 years. Okay, in 10 years in my career, this is the first year that my responsibilities, work responsibilities, are over at like. Some days it's 11 a.m., some days it's noon, some days. This past week I was on for 4 hours, so I was done at 1.
She's talking Sundays now.
Mm-hmm. Sundays, okay? Mm-hmm. First time. Usually Sundays I'm wall-to-wall work responsibility and pertaining to games, right? So I can't even begin to tell you how much the past 3 Sundays have meant to me that I'm home, I'm a fan, I'm watching, so I've got my routine down. I'm watching the Giants. I've got the DirecTV. I've got a few iPads. I've got certain games going. I'm commercials. I'm going to the red zone. And from 1 until that break before the Sunday night football game goes by like that. Like, you know, right? You know you are just in heaven when time goes by like that. It's unbelievable to me. So, you know, I
loved those teams, though. Trust me, you would have. Even though you want to wing it, you would have loved those teams.
I get it, but I feel bad that you don't appreciate today's NFL. You don't like that's sad to me that you don't appreciate today's NFL, because today's NFL is just it's still exciting. It's still fun to watch.
It is.
It still has a lot to offer.
It is. It's just not the same.
All right. So let's. we can agree to disagree. All right.
Okay.
We've got about 15 minutes left in the show. Let's start talking about what's coming up for the Giants, and of course that's the Minnesota Vikings game on Monday Night Football. 201-939-4513. If you want to get into the show, now's the time to do it. Again, if you're watching the show on our Giants app, we have two poll questions out. The first one is, who will be the leading rusher for the Giants against the Vikings on Monday Night Football? 82% have said Orleans Darkwa. 18% has said Rashad Jennings. We also have another poll question out there. Will Eli Manning throw for over 300 yards against the Vikings? Right now, 85% say yes. 15% says no. That's where we're at. Continue to respond to the polls. I'll continue to update you in regard to those percentages. But let's bring people up to speed what's going on here. Because it's a Monday night game, today is more like a Tuesday for the Giants. So players, there's no practice today. Players are going to be made available around 3:45 this afternoon. We get to go into locker room. Today's the day that Eli Manning addresses the media, so we'll be able to talk to him. Odell Beckham Jr. speaks to the media tomorrow. I know everybody's going to want to talk to him, especially after what's transpired this week. And then the Giants will fly out to Minnesota.
On Sunday.
For the Monday night game. How excited are you to see that stadium? Oh, my gosh. Have you seen? Wow.
You know, we were there last year when the Giants went out to Minnesota and got whacked in the
cold. Yeah, you were at, like, University of Minnesota, though.
Yeah, and so I walked over to see the new building.
Right.
It was pretty well done at that point. Still some finishing touches on the inside, but it was so impressive.
Wow.
It's like this modernistic glass pirate ship. It's like so wicked.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most unique thing I've ever seen from the outside. You know how in Phoenix it looks like a bundt cake from the outside?
Uh-huh.
It's like, what's exciting about that?
Mm-hmm.
This glass ship is cool.
I know. It's really cool. Really excited about it. Big game. Now, a few things to be concerned about. Okay, let's start with what's going on. Since we have the poll question up, let's start with what's going on in that backfield.
Yeah.
Rashad Jennings had a cast on his hand, and that was really the big reason why he did not go last week, was because in the 11th hour, Ben McAdoo and the coaching staff were a little concerned about him playing with the cast.
Ball security.
Exactly. So that's why he was such a late scratch. And then, unfortunately, now Shane Vereen is out for the year because of a tricep issue. So, Orleans Darkwa. Now, because this is interesting to me, because you talk about skill set, right? So, Orleans Darkwa is more the fill-in, the backup to Rashad Jennings. But wouldn't you say Bobby Rainey has more the skill set as the backup for Shane Vereen?
Yes.
So, and then we heard Ben McAdoo, he spoke to the media yesterday, and he said, wow, Paul Perkins is ready. So, now, knowing the skill set of all four of these guys, okay, assuming that Rashad Jennings is going to play,
okay,
how do you see this backfield panning out on Monday night?
I think they're going to wind up splitting it, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think they're going to go with a bell cow, and if somebody does get more than the other, it'll probably be Darkwa. I think he gets the most touches in this game because I think they trust his hands right now, and I don't know what they think about Rashad Jennings. Even if he's active, I don't think they're going to give him the ball 15 times and take a shot that he might lose it.
But what about Bobby Rainey?
Bobby Rainey's an interesting guy here because Mike Sullivan had him in Tampa, and he brought him up here, okay? He's got quicks. He's got speed. He can't catch the ball. But in his career, he has had problems with fumbleitis. Big time when he was in Tampa. In the preseason, he had one fumble, if you'll remember that. And so I don't know how much I trust Bobby Rainey to get the full third down Shane Vereen package. I think I might mix him in a little bit because he's got quicks.
Right.
And against that Minnesota defense, you better have quicks or they're going to crush you.
And you got to pick up the blitz, right? I mean, who's going to – what did they do to Cam Newton? 8 sacks?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and they're opportunistic. So you don't got to – you know, they're getting turnovers. They're getting to the quarterback. I mean, that's – to me, that's one of the questions that has to factor into running back play this
is,
week.
Is being able to understand, pick up the blitz, step in for max protect. Offensive line, talking about the sacks that they got on Cam Newton last week. Offensive line, thoughts on how Bobby Hart did and where you think Marshall Newhouse is this week. What do you anticipate on that offensive line heading into Monday night?
You know, I didn't get the impression that Newhouse was going to be a one-week thing. I got the impression it was going to be a little longer than that. So I do think Bobby Hart gets another start. He gave up one sack and one quarterback hit last week, had an outstanding, ferocious key block on the Giants' first rushing touchdown Sunday, where he just took it inside and powered in with John Jerry and allowed the Giants to ram it in with Darqua. I think it was a mixed bag, but I'd give him a B for the game, to be perfectly frank with you. I think he's going to have to wind up playing again. And I think that, you know, if you're the Giants, yeah, you're going to have to live with some mistakes he's still going to make because he's a young player. You're still going to have to live with some of the mistakes Flowers makes because he's a young player. So if you have to max protect and you have to keep your back in, you got to keep your back in. But I don't think there's much choice right now.
All right, let's stay on the offensive side of the ball really quick. And obviously, Odell Beckham Jr., I'm sure very frustrated. Three games into the season, and he doesn't have a scoring touchdown yet. I'm sure he'd like one. But it doesn't get much easier against Minnesota because he's going to be manned up on with Waynes, right?
Probably Waynes.
Waynes. Mm-hmm. And Waynes is quite good. So, you know, he goes from, obviously, the frustrating day with Josh Norman to now hitting the road, going to Minnesota. All eyes will be on him. Obviously, he's been one of the biggest storylines, especially yesterday. And now another difficult matchup against a good corner.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's the thing that I see with what the Giants are going to have to try to do. Knowing that rush is really strong, that mm-hmm. pass rush is really, really strong, and again, we've got some questions about how they're going to protect, I think you're going to have to run a lot of picks. You're going to have to run a lot of short, deep options with the route tree. I know you mm-hmm. know what I'm talking about. When you run a route tree, there are a lot of ways you can do it. But one of the things you can do is you can flood one side of the field with the short, deep progression. And in my mind, if I'm the Giants, I'm going to make sure that I'm trying to run guys deep, even if I'm only running them to one side, because that will give Eli a less amount of time where he's got to look for somebody. Because if he's got to scan whole field, it takes more time. So what they could do is run more route progressions to one side, but run them in levels to where Eli has the ability, if they run deeper guys and they start taking the coverage deeper, he can go to the underneath guy. That would be one of the ways you could probably combat the problems that the Giants are going to have with the pass pro and trying to move the ball against these guys. Because I don't even know if you can really run the ball that well with them, because they're going to run blitz a lot. And they're really fast.
Now, on the defensive side of the ball, unfortunately, Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie dealing with a groin, Eli Apple with a hamstring, Darian Thompson with a foot. It is Sam Bradford, and he has been, believe it or not, for somebody who's just come in right away to learn an offense. Granted, he's working with North Turner, who I actually think is one of the best offensive coordinators out there. Stephon Diggs, I think, has impressed. Kyle Rudolph, their tight end, last two games, he scored twice. He has two touchdowns so far in the season. No Adrian Peterson, but Jerick McKinnon can rush the football. Matt Asiata is back there as well. I mean, there's some weapons and there's some talent offensively. How concerned are you with this Giants secondary going up against their offense?
You have to be. Three of your top five defensive backs are probably not going to play in this game, in Apple, DRC, and Darian Thompson. How could you not be concerned? I mean, look, I can talk X's and O's. As a fan, you must understand that's a problem.
It absolutely is. I mean, I think you'd like to see special teams. I know you want to talk defense, but I'd like to see a long field. I'd like to see Sam Bradford have to earn it. I think that's critical to this, to him having to go down the field and earn a drive versus anything opportunistic or any special teams mistake that might give them a short field. I think that's one of the things you have to avoid going in, because you do. You have liabilities out there, or unproven question marks, let's say, to put it kindly.
You know, if I can flip this one second back to the Big Blue Wrecking Crew of 86, and again, Jerry Barker joining us here, the Big Blue Wrecking Crew book that he has written about the 86 championship team. Bill Parcells, in this situation, would have started pushing buttons. He would have gone to certain guys and said on Tuesday, before they even got to Wednesday's practice, you can't cover that guy. You know you can't cover that guy, so why are you bothering to show up? Why are you even getting on the plane? You can't do that. And he would have started pushing buttons on certain guys to get them into a ferocious foam, you know, foaming at the mouth fervor, that they'd go out there and they'd kick somebody's butt.
Yeah, there's actually a chapter in there called Button Pusher about exactly what you're talking about.
There you go.
But I think one of the things you point to is more of a historian, and someone's always looking back. I think this is a moment. These two games are a big moment for Ben McAdoo as a coach.
Yeah.
And who, what, and, I'm not saying it's going to define him, but he's going to learn a lot about himself as a head coach in these two
games. And about his team.
And about his team and who he has to be as a team. Because who's the dude that's accountable in the end? You know, the you get the players you get. You're going to line up with the guys you have. Who's going to be accountable for the outcome?
Keep in mind, I mean, this is something we really haven't talked about, and that is, and you don't want to look ahead of the Minnesota Vikings on Monday night, but going up against Green Bay, nobody knows the Green Bay Packers in this facility more than Ben McAdoo does. and knows Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's when you've coached a quarterback and you know their tendencies, and you know how they tick. I think there's a lot of ways that Ben McAdoo can actually help this defense against the Green Bay Packers coming up 2 weeks from now. All right, phone lines are open. Let's take some calls before we do in the show. 201-939-4513. We go to line three. Steve is calling in from West Point. Steve, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Hi.
So, you know, I actually want to be a team player and switch up what I called in about. I was going to talk about intent a little bit about last week's loss, but since we're on the Vikings, I think that's a better thing to just move forward to. So, you know, the Vikings defense, as we all know, is going to be a very, very big challenge for us this week. So I hope our offensive line can hold up. I do look at the potential of the team. I see how many turnovers we've gotten and how many penalties we got last week. And still, we're competitive. And I just think if we could just pull everything together and stop playing a little bit better mistake-free football, you're talking this team could be explosive. There's not going to be too many defenses in the NFL who are going to be able to match up against our offense. And as far as our defensive play has gone, the first 2 weeks, we bailed out our offense, I feel like, by our defensive play because our defense was holding people to field goals and stopping the run. And, you know, you get situations like that. That was helping us out, but we're a little banged up now. Like Paul was saying, we have three of our five best defensive backs injured right now, and it's going to be hard to cover that for the next couple of weeks. We're going to have to scheme around that. And I just wanted to touch on some of the play calling. I feel like we need to get our playmakers the ball, and I feel like, you know, everyone keeps talking about how Odell doesn't have a touchdown this year, and he's been targeted in the end zone and dropped a couple. But I'm not sure if it's a scheme reason or defensive, what they're doing on the defense that's not having a lot of plays called his way when we get down there. But I just feel like there's a lack of play call going his way. Just wanted to get your guys' opinion on that.
Well, I think the one thing you have to remember is that because of the addition of Sterling Shepard, and because of Victor Cruz being able to rebound from his 2 years of leg injuries, the Giants believe that they will be more effective moving the ball if they spread it around. Last year, it was Odell and Odell and more Odell because there wasn't many other targets to go to, or weren't any. So he was getting 14, 15 targets a game. I don't know that that's a healthy number, to be honest. And Jerry, again, this goes back to the 86 team where that was a team effort. And, you know, you talk about who was Phil's go-to guy. It was Mark Bavaro. You know, yes, Bobby Johnson and Lionel Manuel caught important passes. Don't get me wrong. But Bavaro was his 1,000-yard receiver, okay? And I think, you know, I would like you to address that part of it because, to me, that's not a crime to spread the ball around. I get the fact that you want Odell to make his plays, but teams can win by using a plethora of weapons.
Absolutely. And I think Beckham's always a weapon out there. No matter what, if he's getting the ball or drawing coverage, he's still a weapon. And the most important thing is winning. I am surprised at the talk about him not scoring a touchdown yet. You're 2-1. And
are you surprised in this day and age of fantasy football?
Well, that's
really
what I think it's
surprised?
From. Now I'm going to go all Paul in the
really
golden age.
Are you really surprised? That's the talk.
You're right. I mean,
folks drafted him number one overall, some two, some top three.
But his job is to have the Giants win, not the, you know, the West Orange Ravioli or something that's my team win. His job is to have the Giants win. And if they're winning and he's not in the end zone, that's fine. And I think that, listen, the Giants very easily could be 3-0, even with the number of sort of mental lapses that happen on Sunday. We know that. So it's, but that's over. That's in the past. Where do you go moving forward? Listen, I think there'll be games where he ends up getting all the attention and targeted like he was last season, because they'll need that and it'll be effective. But yes, let's use the weapons. How great has Sterling Shepard shown up here in the first month of the season?
And and people need to realize, like, he's and thank you for the phone call, by the way. People need to realize he's all that plus a bag of chips. He's just a really, really great young man, isn't he? He's cool to be around. He gets it. Jerry, he gets it. Do you know what I mean? Like yes, he's young. Yes, he's a millennial. But he knows what this opportunity is. He respects the NFL. He respects his position. He seems like he's an old soul.
He's been through a lot.
It's the best way I can. I mean, he's a really special young man.
He could have played for Bill.
Yeah, and he's been through a lot in life already.
Right.
But to underscore what you're talking about, to get it and to get it in this town, it means a lot. It does, because you can be in other towns and be a good player, and it takes more to get it here. And if that's the case with him, that's even exponentially a better start for him.
All right, let's end the show with Carl, who's calling in from Charlotte. Carl, welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hopefully you're safe and sound in Charlotte. Our prayers go out to everybody who's dealing with so much adversity there. But let's try to end the show strong today, Carl. Welcome in.
Okay, thank you, Anita. How you doing, Paul?
Hi.
I wanted to give a little take on the way you and Anita see football today. I grew up loving the 86 Giants, my favorite team ever. But I do see back then it was kind of boring for me, because there was just those certain four or five teams every single year. And if the Super Bowls were blowouts, if they were unwatchable, really. Today, everybody has a shot. And that's what's the real exciting thing about it. I don't like what fantasy football has done, because I used to sit around and watch whole football games with my father. Now, when my kids come downstairs, of course I'm in Charlotte watching the Giants. I've got to have the DirecTV. They want to keep changing the channel. They want to see what their player is doing. I'm like, no. This thing is expensive, man.
You need five screens like she's got in the apartment.
you can check your stats any time of the day. It doesn't make a difference. But, I mean, we have big fights over here. And it ends up, hey, I pay the bill. I'm watching the Giants, man, to get you. So I do see the difference. Today's NFL is more fun because everybody has a shot, everyone. Back then, it was great linebackers sitting on the bench, like you said before, that could be playing, but you know,
Carl, the best way to illustrate
that was it.
The best way to illustrate the change in the game is that back in '86, and Jerry mentioned Brad Benson before. We all remember the bad nose, and you know, he just could not get that right after all these years. He still has trouble with that nose. Brad Benson was the first ever NFC Offensive Player of the Week who was an offensive lineman, because he totally dominated and shut down Dexter Manley in the game against the Redskins that we were talking about before. Now, you think that would happen today? There's no way in the world that's going to happen today. And the game, because the game is just different. It's all about the pass, and it's all about the explosiveness, and it's all about the ESPN highlights. You know, if you love the game, you love the X's and O's, you love the blood and guts, you love the physicality, you love the mind games about it, you can appreciate when Brad Benson won that award. And let me tell you something, that was very historic and very monumental, and it was a tremendous amount of respect that was given to him, and he appreciated that, and this Giants organization was thrilled for him that he had won it. I don't know if you addressed that much in the book.
He actually told me, single greatest day of my life.
Bingo.
Changed my life forever when he shut down Manley down there in RFK in December.
Dexter was a monster in those days.
Yeah.
And he totally took him out of the game, and he gets that award. And I don't know how many offensive linemen have won it since. I really don't.
I don't know either.
He might have been the only one.
But he was the first, yeah.
So that's what I'm talking about.
Carl, thank you.
Now she's going to go out and kick my butt after the show.
Carl, thank you for the phone call. Be safe down there in Charlotte, please.
Thanks, Carl.
Final thoughts, and thank you so much for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. This has been an absolute treat. Hopefully our Big Blue Kickoff Live audience has enjoyed it as much as we have, but Any final thoughts about your book before you go? I know you have a signing coming
up,
right?
Oh, yeah. I have a signing.
Show it.
You should come out in Maplewood on October 13th, Words in Maplewood. I'll be there to sign the book. We'll talk more. We'll talk. I don't know if I can go as much in depth as Paul does, but I got 95,000 words here to tell the story of the foundational team, the first Super Bowl team here. Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed it, guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, again, no practice today here at the facility, but players will be made available around 3:45. We'll be in the locker room. Those interviews will be up on Giants.com a little bit later on this afternoon. And tomorrow, I know you're usually on with Howard tomorrow.
Yeah, but I also want to mention that Giants Press Conference Live, not on today. MSG's going to have it on tomorrow at 4:30 instead of our usual time today at 2 o'clock. 4:30 on Thursday, myself and David Deal.
So do you know who's in here tomorrow?
That I do not know. Okay. I might be. I don't know. They'll let me know.
Okay. So regardless, you know that two people will be here. Maybe
yes.
Three.
Maybe three.
Maybe three. We don't know, but at least two people will be in here hosting Big Blue Kickoff Live for you tomorrow at high noon. Have a great afternoon, everybody.